And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana University basketball news and discussion. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Podcast on the Brink is a joint production of the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. For complete coverage of IU basketball, visit assemblycall.com and insidethehall.com.
Hi fans, this is Don Fisher, the radio voice of the Indiana Hoosiers. IU football tickets are on sale now for the 2018 season. Indiana hosts seven home games this fall in newly expanded Memorial Stadium. Don't miss any of the action as the Hoosiers take on the Cardinals of Ball State, the Virginia Cavaliers, and five Big Ten opponents, including Michigan State, Iowa, Penn State, Maryland, and the Purdue Boilermakers. For ticket information, visit IUHoosiers.com today. Go IU!
On this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink, Alex Bozich and I continue our journey through the Big Ten, previewing Indiana's conference opponents for the upcoming season by talking with Brian Newbert, a past guest here on Podcast on the Brink. Brian covers the Purdue Boilermakers for goldenblack.com, and we talk with him about the outlook for this year's Purdue team. They obviously had a very good year last year. What do things look like for this year with a lot of experienced guys gone and a lot more weight on the shoulders of Carson Edwards? We also talk with him about the Armon Franklin recruitment and a number of other subjects as we preview the Boilermakers for the upcoming season. Before we get to that conversation real quick, a couple of words about our sponsor for this week's episode, SeatGeek. You know, football is back, and SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every game all season long. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There is nothing quite like being there in person, even if it's monsoon conditions at the opener at Memorial Stadium, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. You know, SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever, and every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. This is why I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and whether I'm looking to buy basketball tickets or looking to go to a baseball game or a concert, SeatGeek is what I use. I just find the experience to be very pleasing. I've always found really good prices, and I know, you know, a few actually listeners to this show and to the Assembly Call have had issues with tickets and have contacted SeatGeek, and they've made everything right, which, you know, fully guaranteed. I mean, it really makes you feel confident getting tickets there. So that's why I feel so comfortable recommending them to you. And best of all, listeners to Podcast on the Brink get $20 off of your first SeatGeek purchase. So all you do is download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, today. That's promo code BRINK, and you will get $20 off of your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. And now, here's our conversation with Brian Newbert about the Purdue Boilermakers. Brian, welcome back to Podcast on the Brink. Always great to chat with you.
Thanks for having me, guys, as always. Appreciate it.
So let's talk a little Purdue hoops here. You know, Purdue obviously coming off a very good three-year stretch, winning 78% of the regular season games, capturing a Big Ten title in 2017, a couple of Sweet 16s. And the through line on all three of those teams were the guys who graduated last year: Vincent Edwards, Dakota Mathias, Isaac Haas, PJ Thompson, with Ryan Klein as the one holdover, all names that IU fans obviously know very well. As Purdue basketball looks to move forward now and build on the success they've had over the last few years, does any one of those guys stand out who you think will be especially missed or hard to replace?
I think probably the group, because when you look at the success Purdue had the last couple of years, a huge part of it was their team chemistry. Those guys were built to play together in terms of how their individual skill sets played together, but also they played so much basketball together that by the end, they had such good chemistry, and they were such a good passing basketball team, and they just had such a good synergy about them all through those four seniors that I don't know if you could really pick one above the other. They all, you know, you can make a case for almost all of them. Isaac Haas was the starting point for everything they did offensively, and you saw exactly how valuable he was when they didn't have him against Texas Tech in the NCAA tournament, completely undid their season. I will take to my grave the opinion that had Purdue had Isaac Haas against Texas Tech, that's an entirely different basketball game. But be that as it may, Dakota Mathias is one of the most skilled offensive players Purdue's probably ever had, and kind of the face of a team that was a great three-point shooting team over the years, but also a brilliant passing team, a brilliant offensively skilled team. Obviously, Vincent Edwards is one of the most productive all-around players Purdue's probably ever had in 100 years of playing basketball or whatever it's been. So obviously, all three of those guys were really good, really influential, really impactful, really productive players for a very long period of time. PJ Thompson obviously played a role and played it very well. But in terms of if you had to pick one over the other, I don't know how you would do it. I would probably just cop out and say the whole class as a collective is going to be missed.
Yeah, when I wrote that question, that was kind of what I thought you might answer. Because, you know, you that's the thing you noticed about watching them play last year is that chemistry, and that can be hard to replace. So, you know, now as we look forward to this season, everything is going to revolve around Carson Edwards. And he was fantastic in his role last year, but he's not going to have as much help this year as he's had the last two seasons. Is there, in your mind, any reason to doubt his ability to excel in this new role with so much more on his shoulders?
From a talent perspective, no. I think leadership is going to be something that Purdue is going to have to get from him and get it probably early. The question I would have, and I don't mean this as a criticism, I would mean this as a what happens when things don't go well? Who kind of gets everybody together? Who is patient? Who's positive? Purdue has had so much experience on its roster for so long and so many kind of calm heads. And that is not what I would, not how I would describe Carson Edwards. He's a very, very competitive, very strong-willed, very emotional player. And a ton is going to be asked of him this year, obviously as a basketball player, but he's also going to have to make people around him better. He's also going to have to handle situations when things aren't going well. He's going to have to have some poise about him, some patience about him. He's going to have to be a leader. And I think that's something that I wouldn't necessarily doubt he can do, but it's something he's going to have to prove he can do, because this is obviously his team now. It's obviously not just his team as a scorer. It's his team as a playmaker. It's his team as a presence, his team as a personality, his team in every sense of the term, his team. It is his. And when things get bad, they're going to need him to do something positive. When things get really bad, they're going to need him to be really, really poised and really, really just kind of collected. And what we've seen from him so far from a personality standpoint, you do kind of wonder, because he is a very emotional guy and stuff like that. And everybody's seen, I think, the gif from the Big Ten tournament where he's just kind of staring at Matt Harms. That is sort of his example thus far of leadership. But leadership comes in many forms, in many different situations, and it wasn't necessarily needed from him before because he had so many veterans around him and so many guys who were wired well to be leaders. Now he doesn't have that around him, so he's going to have to really, really, really elevate everything he does in every sense of the term.
Brian, I'm sure Matt Painter doesn't want the leadership mantle to only fall to Carson Edwards. I'm sure there's other guys on this team that he wants to kind of step up and assume some of those responsibilities. Besides Edwards, you know, who are some of the guys you're looking at going into the season that could be important from that standpoint?
Yeah, Purdue does have good leaders. They're just young. I think Nojel Eastern is going to be a great leader for Purdue over time. He's only a sophomore. I think Matt Harms can be a really good leader for Purdue in time. He's only a sophomore. I think Evan Boudreau is a guy coming from Dartmouth who can be a leader because he's so experienced and because he sort of seems to have that about him. He will be playing his first game at Purdue come November or come October, whenever the season starts. I don't know. So Purdue has some guys who are wired to be leaders, but as of right now, Carson Edwards is the guy who obviously is the most accomplished player on the team, but also one of the most experienced. Ryan Klein is really your other upperclassmen, him and Grady Eifert. Those guys, I don't know if their personalities are necessarily so overt that you would necessarily think that they're obviously going to be really good leaders for you. I just think from a stature of player perspective, from a responsibility perspective, I just think Carson Edwards has to be that guy for them. Perhaps not as the one singular leader, but simply a guy who handles situations well, who makes people around him better in every sense of the term, making people better, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it's pretty rare that a team loses four starters and then is able to come back the next season and perform to the same level as the previous year. So I'm sure that there's some expectation of a backslide for Purdue. But if they are, you know, I'm looking at the Athlon Sports preview right now. They picked Purdue fifth in the Big Ten and have them actually winning a game in the NCAA tournament. If a scenario like that is to happen, obviously we know Carson Edwards is going to be a big part of that. But from a production standpoint, when you lose four starters, who are some of the guys you're looking at? I know we talked a little bit about the leadership, but you know, from a statistical standpoint, who are maybe, you know, one or two key guys that you think are really going to have to make major leap forwards if Purdue is to meet to expectations like the ones I described?
Well, obviously, you know, Purdue has played to the post quite a bit the last few years. That's going to change because Matt Harms is going to be a really good player for Purdue. I think he already is a good player for Purdue, but he's very different. Player. He's not Isaac Haas. He's not Caleb Swanigan. He's not AJ Hammonds. He's a guy who's going to be productive, but I think you're going to see Purdue in more ball screen stuff. I think you're going to see Purdue use its five man in motion more. I think they're going to have to really, really find different ways to feature him as from an offensive perspective and from a defensive perspective. I think he's a guy who has to have a great season for them, has to have a very good season for them. No, Jell Eastern, obviously, it probably doesn't matter who Purdue's point guard is all that much because Carson Edwards is going to have the ball in his hands so much. And between he and No, Jell Eastern, they're pretty interchangeable in the sense they can both play both backcourt positions. But he's obviously going to have to really improve from one year to the next. He did a lot of really positive things as a freshman, also had some, you know, standard freshman struggles early on, but he played his best basketball at the end of the year. He's going to have to be one of Purdue's best players, if not its second or third or fourth best player. So they're going to need him to give them, you know, some reliability at the point or if he's playing off the ball, wherever it may be, he's going to be a really important ball handler for them. He's going to have to be a really important defender for them. People saw at the end of the year with the job he did on Tony Carr a couple of times, and that's what he's capable of from a defensive perspective. But this is going to be a very, very different Purdue team. They're going to be more dribble-oriented, things like that. So productivity is going to come in kind of different forms. But the two guys who really jump out, obviously, are your two sophomores. You know, Purdue the last 2 years has had a sophomore go from not even all Big Ten to All-American. And I wouldn't anticipate that happening again this year, but Purdue has a nice little precedent going of guys making a huge leap from year one to year two. And Purdue could certainly use that sort of thing this year from either No, Jell Eastern or Matt Harms, or both preferably. Other than that, you know, Purdue's got a lot of unknowns. They've got like seven new guys or something like that. One of which is Evan Boudreau, who we talked about before, the 2 year grad transfer from Dartmouth. Purdue had to get somebody in the spring to kind of hold down the four. That was really their one gaping void on their roster, to get somebody accomplished, to get somebody who can help them as a rebounding team, which is going to be a huge question for them. That hasn't been a huge question the last couple of years, but also somebody who can do that while bringing some offensive relevance to that position, I think was huge. That was the guy they had to have. I don't think he's going to be a 20-10 guy by any means right away, but if he can be a 10-6 guy, something like that, and just hold that position down, I think he can. I think that would be absolutely enormous for Purdue because of what they would have had otherwise at that position. Those are just sort of some of the guys who jump out right away, but obviously the two most important ones are the two sophomores, No, Jell Eastern and Matt Harms, but also Ryan Klein. You know, he didn't get shots a lot last year because they had so many other shooters. He's going to get more shots now probably because he's kind of the last man standing from all those shooters, you know, Purdue had on its roster all those years. And I could see him being a 40 to 45% 3-point guy if he gets good looks off of Carson Edwards' penetration, which I think he will. So that's kind of a long answer to a short question, but I would start with Nojel Eastern and Matt Harms. But there's obviously a lot of guys. When you're pretty close to rebuilding, you need a lot of different guys to become something they weren't before. And that's obviously obviously the position producing here with basically a whole new basketball team.
Are there any freshmen that you expect to be rotation players, if not at the beginning of the season, then that you would project as being an important part of the rotation, you know, maybe once Big Ten play hits?
Yeah, I think obviously Purdue's going to expect a lot from Eric Hunter right away, the true freshman guard, because they're a little bit thin in the backcourt. He can play both spots, and they really like him. You know, Purdue doesn't really have a true point guard on its roster, and they could have reached in the spring for a grad transfer just to have somebody who's a ball handler. They did not do that, which said to me they were really comfortable not only with Eric Hunter playing as a freshman, but maybe even playing point guard a lot as a freshman. I think he's probably going to be their number two point guard, although it's a little bit up in the air because Carson Edwards can play point guard too. Obviously, Nojel Eastern can play point guard. They might not necessarily have a true point guard, but they have a lot of options at point guard. I think Eric Hunter is very much one of them. I think he's going to be asked to play big minutes right away. The two young big men coming in, I don't know. I think you're probably going to use Evan Boudreau a little bit at the five as an undersized offensive option there. But one of those guys is going to have to help them right away, whether it's Emmanuel Dewona or Travion Williams. I would redshirt both of them if I could, but I don't think you can, simply because you don't have the depth to do that. There are also two redshirt freshmen coming in, but becoming eligible. Sasha Stefanovic and Aaron Wheeler. Aaron Wheeler is the best athlete on the team, the best overall athlete on the team. A guy who's unbelievably promising from a physical perspective. I just don't know where he fits in right now. I don't know if he has a position. I don't know if he's strong enough at this point to play at a really high level in the Big Ten. Complete unknown, but somebody who, if he's ready to help them, can really take them from one level to the next. Sasha Stefanovic is a really good jump shooter and a really good overall basketball player too, just in his sort of basketball savvy, kind of a lot like Dakota Mathias. I wouldn't make that comparison quite yet, just because Dakota Mathias was so advanced and such an intellectual basketball player and just saw things no one else saw, and then also made himself into a really good defensive player. Sasha Stefanovic has a long way to go before he's even in that conversation, but the raw materials are kind of along the same lines there. Not sure what to expect from him right away either, but he's somebody who probably down the line is going to have to really help them because of where they are from a depth perspective in the backcourt. They don't have a lot of guards, so there are opportunities in the backcourt for sure to help. But in terms of which newcomer is going to help Purdue the most, it's obviously Evan Boudreau. He's going to be a starter, I would have to think, from day one. Is going to be probably a 25 to 30 minute guy potentially, and just gives them a potential solution at a position where they otherwise had big questions.
What is the general fan confidence level in Matt Painter? And I guess I ask that, you know, obviously there's going to be a lot of confidence. The guy's had great regular season success. I think he's a really good coach. And yet, you know, I went to high school in West Lafayette, so I have a lot of friends who are Purdue fans. And it does seem like sometimes in the NCAA tournament, big games, there's maybe a little lack of confidence in their ability to get it done, in part because, you know, they've maybe underachieved in a few recent tournaments. What is the overall satisfaction level among the fan base with the job Matt Painter has done?
Well, I think by and large, people recognize the good work he's done at Purdue. I will also tell you that when a program hasn't been to a Final Four in 3+ decades and has a fan base as passionate about basketball as Purdue's, that tends to be a toxic mix. I think there's a certain impatience that takes over in certain moments where people want it so bad that there may be a little bit. I don't want to piss off my readers here when I say this, but there might be a little bit of a predisposition to jump off the bridge when things happen, especially in the NCAA tournament. But I think by and large, people recognize the good work he's done. You know, at the end of the day, there is some perspective too. I know every coach has circumstances, but Painter had two, what I think a lot of people would agree with me as Final Four caliber teams built at Purdue that both got undercut by Robbie Hummel blowing out his knee twice. And last year, Purdue had what some people thought was a Final Four capable team. I don't know if I did. Team that lost Isaac Haas in the first game of the NCAA tournament. And as I said before, if you go back and unpack the Texas Tech game that booted Purdue from the tournament, they needed Isaac Haas in that game more than any other game they played all of last season. And if they have Isaac Haas in that game, the way Texas Tech was able to defend on the perimeter, the counterpunch to that was to get the ball inside to the gigantic human being in one-on-one coverage all day long. And if that were the case, Purdue's whole game would open back up. And obviously it didn't. So I think every coach has circumstances. Every team goes through things and whatnot. But Painter's taken some really bad beats over the years from a luck perspective when it's come to untimely injuries. I think that perspective probably matters. That being said, this is a very, very Final Four hungry fan base Purdue has, and every year they don't go to the Final Four only makes them hungrier. So that kind of leads into it sometimes.
Brian, from a recruiting perspective, obviously big news last week was the Armon Franklin decision, him picking Indiana over Purdue. Was that surprising at all to you? And, is there any, I guess, I don't know the right way to word this, but with kind of what Archie Miller has done in the state, is there any angst amongst Purdue fans about in-state recruiting at this point? Or is it, is it just kind of business as usual and Purdue is recruiting a certain set of kids and is going to get some and not get the others? I'm just kind of curious because I know a year ago around this time we had a conversation and we didn't quite know what Archie Miller would do from a recruiting perspective. At that point, he had gotten, I believe, Demezi Anderson and Robert Fennessy. That was pre-Romeo and now Armon Franklin. So I'm just kind of curious from your perspective and also maybe the Purdue fan perspective, what the thoughts are in terms of in-state recruiting at this point.
Yeah, to the first part of your question, if I was surprised about Armon Franklin, if Purdue fans were surprised, yes. Obviously, everybody believed he was bound for Purdue. He was extremely attracted to Purdue because he was going to get to play with some of his best friends at Purdue. He and Isaiah Thompson are, if not best friends, pretty close to it, as I understand it. Purdue deals with something in recruiting where because they've played through their big men so much the last couple of years, people use that against them. And they tell guard recruits that if you're a guard, they're not going to make you better. They're not going to use you. They're not going to develop you. They're not going to get you where you want to go. I'm not saying necessarily that that's why Armon Franklin didn't come to Purdue. I'm saying it was used against them. I'm certain it was what Minnesota was doing with Eric Hunter last year. I don't know if it's necessarily based in reality, but it is hard to support the data because Purdue's always had a good big man pretty much. So it's really hard to say Purdue's best player has ever been a guard. Etwan Moore was a great player at Purdue, but he was right there side by side with a first team All-American in Juwan Johnson. That's just something Purdue deals with in recruiting. I think that probably was something that Indiana used in recruiting a little bit. I'm not saying that he didn't have other reasons to go to Indiana. I'm saying that was probably a factor. Indiana obviously is a hell of a draw. It's one of your top 10 programs in college basketball history, obviously. A really, really prominent place, a really, really attractive place. And they are going to get kids. They are going to get a lot of really good recruits. They're going to get a lot of really good recruits in Indiana all the time. What has happened in terms of the head-to-head is really nothing different than basically history. I mean, Purdue has never really successfully on a consistent basis recruited head to head against Indiana. I think that's the nature of what the two programs are. Purdue has often gotten the guys Indiana didn't want, or they have just recruited two different sets of guys. You know, the last few years, Purdue has really kind of opened up its net a little bit, done a pretty good job in Ohio, got some really good players out of Texas. One great player out of Texas, obviously. So the head-to-head stuff hasn't really been all that prevalent until the last maybe year and a half or so. What's happened in the last year and a half or so with Indiana getting the guys it's wanted head to head really hasn't been all that different than sort of the way it's always been. And I don't want to be disrespectful to Purdue saying that. That's just reality.
As you look forward to the classes of 2019 and 2020 for Purdue, anything notable? How are those classes kind of shaping up, even though it's obviously way, you know, kind of early to be looking at those?
Yeah, I think 2020 is a class where both Purdue and Indiana are going to have to go somewhere else to get players, because the 2020 class, to me, doesn't look very good, to put it mildly, at least very deep. Obviously, there's a couple of guys who are going to get offers from the Big Ten level, but I think Purdue, if all goes as planned for Purdue, and obviously it's not all gone as planned because it wanted both Armand Franklin and Brandon Newman, and obviously they aren't going to get Armand Franklin. If all goes as planned for Purdue, they're going to get five guys this year, and if they get five guys this year, they only have, I think, one scholarship for next year. So I think what they would probably do is target a big man for that. I think they're in decent shape with Zach Loveday from Ohio, who's a pretty good player, a pretty highly recruited player. I think they're one of his favorites right now. Other than that, it is kind of early. They offer Jaden Ivey from Mishawaka at their elite camp a couple weeks ago, but I don't know if they can really take a guard anytime soon without knowing how many scholarships they're going to have. So I think if you only have one scholarship, it's almost it almost doesn't matter. But the much more pressing matter for Purdue is getting a really good 2019 class, because it's a big class numbers wise and a class where you really need some guys to come in and score for you. Purdue would love to get Malik Hall from Sunrise Christian. I think they probably came into the fall as the leader for him, but there's a lot of sharks swimming on that one. Oregon's in there too. Michigan State's in there. So obviously they already have Isaiah Thomas, Mason, and Mason Gillis committed. They need three more. They'd love to get Brandon Newman. Obviously would love to get Malik Hall or another pretty high end forward. And, I think that's the much more pressing matter than the 2020 class, which is probably going to go down as sort of a blip from a scholarship numbers perspective.
As we look forward to kind of the Big Ten at large this year, how do you see the top of the Big Ten shaping up, and where do you think Purdue fits into that mix as you project them forward?
I would probably initially put Purdue as kind of a middle of the pack to, sort of fourth, fifth range right off the bat. Obviously, having a first-team All-American is a good starting point, but they have so many unknowns around him that it is just really hard to say. We know what Nojel Eastern is going to be. We know what Matt Harms is going to be. We know what seven newcomers are going to be. We know what Evan Boudreau is going to be. I think the potential is there for them to be in that top two or three in the league. I just don't know if I would necessarily predict it right off the bat. In terms of the rest of the league, oh man, let me try to think about who's going to be good here. I think Michigan's going to be good again. Maryland should be better, although I thought their opportunity might have came and went when Kevin Herter did. Had they gotten him back, I would have really liked them. I think obviously Indiana's going to make a jump with obviously Romeo Langford going along with Juwan Morgan, who people should not forget about because of Romeo. He's a really good player, first team All Big Ten caliber player. Michigan State's always going to be good. In terms of who the league favorite would be right off the bat, I don't know who I'd go with at this point, but I would probably say Michigan.
Brian, that's interesting because I've kind of had a hard time as well when I've kind of done some of my off-season power rankings, things like that.
Yeah.
And Michigan State is the team that most people are picking to win the league. Do you have a problem with that? I mean, do you think are you high on Michigan State going into the season? To me, it kind of seems like that's just based on Cassius Winston being back, Nick Ward and Langford, and the fact that Tom Izzo is their coach. But I'm not sure I'm sold on them being a clear-cut favorite, and most of the preseason magazines, at least at this point, they have been.
Yeah, somebody's going to have to make a move for them to really score. I think whether that's Josh Langford, whether that's Cassius Winston being more of a scorer, whether that's them playing through Nick Ward much more than they've had to with him being flanked by two lottery picks, I don't know. But I think Tom Izzo always gets the benefit of the doubt, and he should at this point. But I think most years Michigan State, when they're really talented, I think they're going to be in the top five in those preseason polls. When they maybe don't have the high end guys, like I don't know if they do this year, they're still going to be picked by a lot of people to be number one in the Big Ten. I don't necessarily know if I see it at this point, but I've been so wrong about so many Michigan State teams over the years that I probably should just keep my mouth shut.
Brian, last question for you. Is it pretty much a foregone conclusion that Carson Edwards is going to be gone after this season? Or kind of what chances would you put on him coming back for his senior year?
Well, I think that Purdue has to prepare itself for it. I think they're recruiting for it because he did go to the NBA draft combine. He is getting some pretty positive vibes. But at the end of the day, when you're a 6-foot guard and you're going to be asked to play a position that, you know, in the NBA that you maybe don't play before, or you haven't played in college, I think that maybe that limits your upside a little bit. So this isn't like he's going to be a lottery pick kind of thing. Is I think if he gets in the first round, you have to go. But I think there's going to be enough questions there where he might not necessarily be that slam dunk first rounder. So I don't know if I would ever say that he's absolutely going to leave the way I would have said Caleb Swanigan's absolutely going to leave. And then as it turned out, he almost did. He wanted to come back to Purdue. He just couldn't because of the business realities involved. His draft stock was in a place where he could not go. And part of that too was he could not do more on the court than he did as a sophomore. Now you're kind of looking at Carson Edwards being in a position here where his next step as a player and a prospect is not to produce, not to score a ton of points, not to dunk on people, not to, you know, be a defensive menace. It's to lead a team. It is to be the singular guy on a team and make that team good and show people that you can be an effective lead guard with the ball in your hands. You can be a good leader. You can be a winner when you're not surrounded by guys who are already established as winners. So all of that stuff is going to go into where exactly he is next April. And if that stuff doesn't all fall into place for him and he's still perceived as a guy who's, you know, isn't going to get out of the second round or might not get drafted at all, he has to come back. So I think in the best case scenario right now, people think he's got a really good chance to get into the first round in a weak draft, but everything is left to be proven here. He's going to be drafted on things that go beyond his scoring, which he's obviously proven himself as, and so on and so forth. So I think that question is going to be answered by how he plays, obviously, like it is with any prospect here in the next couple of months. So as of right now, I would probably say it's maybe 60-40 that he's going, just because, you know, he's a first-team All-American. He's been through the process. He's been to the NBA draft combine. It's a weak draft, so things are setting up favorably for him. But I think everything is left to be determined here over the next couple of months.
He's Brian Neubert. You can read his work and keep tabs on the enemy over at goldenblack.com. Follow him at Brian Neubert, or on Twitter at Brian Neubert. Brian, we always appreciate you coming on Podcast on the Brink and giving us some insight on the Boilermakers. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. To get more from me and from Alex, visit assemblycall.com and insidethehall.com for complete coverage of Indiana University basketball. If you liked this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend or family member who loves IU basketball as much as you do. You can also support the show by leaving a rating and review on iTunes, which helps us get the word out to more IU fans like yourself. We will be back next week with a new episode. Until then, as always, go Hoosiers.